Good evening, everybody. I welcome you all to Midweek Bible Study at the Grace Community. We've been on a topic studying the Bible, and in the last few weeks, we've looked at a few introductory aspects. Last week was a session I termed technical. And I remember at the end of the session on our WhatsApp platform, someone, let me not mention any names, also agreed with that description of the session being technical. I discussed with somebody else, you know, I really wish we can quickly finish these sessions and then go into things that may sound a bit more practical for people. It's just that I believe it's essential and important that we still cover these sessions. I hope this week will not be as technical as last week, and people will be able to easily understand and follow. So last week we looked at the reasons for accepting the authenticity or the reliability of the writings of the Bible, and I won't go over it again. You know, the audio is available, and if you have any questions, you can always reach out to any of the pastors individually or personally, and we can answer any other questions or any other queries that people would have. So today we'll proceed in the series as we look at what we've titled the canon of scripture, or looking at the issues of canonicity. You know, somewhere along the line, someone had asked the question, are there other books that were written that are not present in the Bible? And this is what this session is going to address. And if you look at it, since many other religious books were written during both the time, the Old and New Testament periods, or those books were written as well, what particular books, you know, are accepted into scripture? What books were inspired, or what books should be recognized as part of God's authoritative revelation? Are there any books that are probably missing? Is there anything we are missing out from? Are there any books that are included that shouldn't really be in the Bible? You know, and these are obvious questions, you know, that God's people should ask or may ask. And those are the questions that we will try and answer. Or those are the issues we want to elaborate on in this session. First, let's look at the issue of the meaning of that word canon, or the term canonicity. The word canon itself is used to describe those books that are recognized by the church as inspired of God. The word itself comes from the Greek word canon, K-A-N-O-N, and literally it means, one, a straight rod or a bar. It also could mean a measuring rule or a ruler that is used by masons and carpenters, you know. And then it could also mean, figuratively, a rule or standard for testing straightness. And so historically, the word was first used by the church regarding doctrines that were accepted as the rule of faith and practice. However, the term came to be applied to the decisions of the councils as rules by which to live. And the usage of the word canon was in the metaphorical sense of a rule, of a norm, or a standard. Eventually, by the 4th century AD, it was applied, that term canon was applied to a list or a collection of books that met a prescribed standard recognized by the church. And so now, in a theological sense, you know, the term canon refers to the collection of Jewish and early Christian writings that are recognized as divinely inspired and authoritative scripture, which guide the beliefs and practices of the church. Now, it's important to note, very, very important to note, that the different religious councils or church councils did not have any power to declare books as being inspired. Rather, it was that the writings were recognized as divinely inspired. I'll say that again. See, the councils or the men were not the ones who determined the inspiration of those books. Rather, the men and the councils, these groups of people, simply recognized what God had inspired. It's important to, you know, reiterate that point again. See, because the Bible itself is self-authenticating, because the books were breathed out by God. Remember that scripture? And I told you at the start that we will go back to that scripture over and over again. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16, where it says all scripture is God breathed and is useful for teaching, for rebuking, for correcting, and training in righteousness. And so the books were canonical the moment they were written. Their canonicity was inherent within them since they were inspired by God. They came from God. So people and councils only recognize and acknowledge what is true because of the intrinsic inspiration of the books as they were written. No book became canonical simply because the church said it was. Rather, it was that the church just recognized that this has a stamp of God's inspiration, if you understand that. You see, nevertheless, in spite of that, there was still the role of men and councils, because they had to consider which books should have been recognized as part of the canon, since there were some books that were not inspired. And so some decisions had to be made, some choices had to be made, and God guided different groups of people to make correct choices and to collect the various writings into the canons of the Old and the New Testament. Now, in regard to that, there are two important councils that I'll just mention, you know, that were involved in this. One was called the Council of Hippo, and this took place sometime in AD 393. This was probably the first church council to lay down the limits of the canon of scripture. And then the second one was the Council of Carthage. This took place in AD 397. And essentially what happened was that the findings of the Council of Hippo were reiterated at the Council of Carthage. Now, these councils used some guidelines, and we will just discuss those guidelines and we'll close today, right? The councils used some guidelines to determine which books they would accept as being inspired. And of course, it follows naturally. By what process did these councils, did the early church recognize which books were inspired and which ones were not? And so I'll just give a summary. Again, trying not to be too technical, you know, trying to explain it in simple terms so that we would understand. Now, for the Old Testament books, there were specific tests to consider the canonicity or whether the book should be accepted as being part of the canon. Now, the first was, did the book itself indicate that God was speaking through the writer? Did the book itself indicate that God was speaking through the writer? And the book itself, did it have a mark of being authoritative as God speaking, you know? And so in many of the books in the Old Testament, you would see references to the fact that God was speaking through the human author, Just think through in the Old Testament. There will be statements like, "Thus saith the Lord," you know. And so that occurred very often. That occurred very often. The second thing was whether the books were authoritative, you know. And again, that's something you will find in many of the books of the Old Testament, you know. The books and the contents were very authoritative. Now, the second thing that was considered was the human author recognized as a spokesman of God at that time? I mean, was this person a prophet, or did he have the prophetic gift? So, for instance, Moses was regarded to be a prophet. Yeah, you can check Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 18, and you see references to that. You know, so people like Moses, Samuel, and then of course all the other prophets, they were recognized as being spokespersons for God, or they had a prophetic gift, or they were actually occupying the place of prophets in the land of Israel. Each one, Nehemiah, Ezra, David, Jeremiah, Malachi, so all of them had that mark. And so that was another criterion that was used. And then finally, the last major one that was used was the book historically accurate? Did it reflect a record of actual facts? And so it wasn't just, you know, things that just took place, you know, stories and all of that. And so, for instance, there are people who think that the story of Jonah didn't really happen. But see, that was one of the things that they had to go through to be sure that that really happened. So the book of Jonah was not just an allegory. It actually happened. Jesus referred to Jonah's experience. And he referred to it in terms of an actual occurrence. So it wasn't just a story that you know, that was made up. It wasn't just an allegory. It was historical fact. So all the wars, all the imprisonment of Joseph, and all the things that Joseph went through were not just stories that were made up. They were historical facts. And so that was another test that those books went through to confirm whether the books actually recorded historical facts. I know that in some regard, archaeology is just catching up with some of the historical facts. You know, for a long time, many people believed that the earth was flat, even though scripture had from time said that the earth was round, had given indication to the spherical shape of the earth. And for a long time, people believed that, you know, some of the facts in scripture were not true because of that. And so science and even archaeology is taking time to catch up with the revelation that is already in scripture. You know, so yeah, so sometimes, yes, your scientific facts or what you claim to be scientific facts may not line up with the history in scripture, you know, but it's important to recognize that all of those were verified to be historically accurate. Yeah, let's move quickly to the New Testament. So I've said for the Old Testament, the things that were considered was the book itself indicate that God was speaking through the writer, and was he considered authoritative? Was the human author recognized as a spokesperson of God? Was the person a prophet, or did he have a prophetic gift? And then number three, was the book historically accurate? Now for the New Testament books, there were two things, two sides. One was authentication on the divine side, that was inspiration. So did the book give internal evidence of being God-breathed? And the things that were considered was it of proper spiritual character? Did the book edify the church? And was it doctrinally accurate? And so with this, of course, you compare with other teachings and with other writings. So if the book did not meet this criteria, then, you know, it couldn't be accepted as being of a divine inspiration. And then there was also the authentication on the human side, you know, and there were three things that were important here. First, was the author an apostle, or did he, the writer, have an endorsement of an apostle? So for instance, Mark wrote the Gospel of Mark, yeah, the Gospel according to Mark. was written by Mark. Mark wasn't one of the apostles, but historically, it's accepted that Mark wrote that gospel according to Mark under the endorsement of Peter. Okay. Luke was also not named as one of the apostles, but Luke was a close associate of Apostle Paul, and so he wrote under the endorsement of Paul's authority. Okay. And then all the other books were written by one of the apostles. All right. The second thing was that the book have universal acceptance. Universal acceptance. And when I say universal acceptance, was it just a group of churches somewhere that accepted the book, or was the book accepted by the whole majority, the whole majority of the church? You know, so there were a few books that were questioned because of doubts about the author, but eventually, you know, they accepted them. Now, it's important to mention that one historical factor that led to the formal list of the canon was the fact that a lot of heretical writings were now springing up. And there were groups also who were springing up and were making claims for authority. So, for instance, there was this man, popular man in history, you know. His name was Marcion, M-A-R-C-I-O-N, who was recognized to be a major heretic around that time. And he actually developed his own canon. And in his canon, it was an abridged canon. He left out all the Jewish elements of the Bible. He abandoned the Old Testament and only accepted Paul's writings. But even Paul's writings, he left out the pastoral letters of 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and then Titus. So he only accepted some writings, you know. There was also a man called Montanus. And in Montanus' case, he wanted his own prophecies to be included, and he wanted his prophecies that he had written to be elevated to the same level as the other writings. And so the church had to sit down and come up with a list of what was accepted and what wasn't, right? And so, again, I must reiterate that what the church did was that the church simply recognized what the canon was as opposed to determining the canon. So it was God's guidance that made them see which books to take in, which books were truly inspired and which weren't. I'll just run through a list of books that were in existence at that time but were not accepted. Under the Old Testament, for example, the books that were written around the same time as all those Old Testament books, there was what was called the Book of Jubilee, there was the Letter of Aristeas, there was the Book of Adam and Eve, there was one about the martyrdom of Isaiah, if I remember well. There was Enoch, First Enoch and Second Enoch, the Assumption of Moses. There was Baruch, the Psalms of Solomon. Then there's a collection. I must mention this one. There's a collection that is called the Apocrypha. The Apocrypha. Now those books are together collectively. They are 15. But 12 of those books are accepted by the Catholic Church. And so they form part of the Roman Catholic canon. And they are in the Old Testament. Right? And so you have books like Esdras 1 and Esdras 2. You have Tobit. You have Judith. You have the Wisdom of Solomon. You have Ecclesiasticus. Not Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiasticus. You have Baruch, you have the Letter of Jeremiah, we have Bel and the Dragon, we have Susanna, we have the Prayer of Azariah, then we have First and Second Maccabees. I think so, that's the 15. So just in case you hear this and someone says, why, you know, it's just for information, really. While under the New Testament, there are some New Testament writings that were not accepted. You had like the Gospel of Thomas, There's also the Gospel of the Ebionites, the Gospel of Peter, the Epistle of Barnabas, Shepherd of Hermas. There was one called the Didache, the Apocalypse of Peter, the Acts of Paul, and which other one now? I think there was a Gospel According to Hebrews, and one more was the Epistle of Polycarp to the Philippians. Now, each of these books had issues. You know, part of the issues were, like I said, there were concerns about the authorship, you know, who wrote them, you know. And then not only that, the contents of some of the books did not quite line up with the other contents of other books in the Bible. Some of them had very outlandish and dangerous teachings, which, yeah, really is out of the scope of this our discussion. But I just mentioned them so that we will know. Okay, so this was actually how we then got to have this collection of books that we had. And then along the way, the books were now translated into English, and then before we then started to have more and more translations of the Bible. Okay, so next week we will now start to look at some more practical steps or practical tips. We will be looking at guiding principles for study, for interpretation and application of scriptures. And I think really you need to join us next week. We'll be looking at the issues like the centrality of the message of scripture. Then we will look at things like reading with sincere objectivity, reading contextually, things to avoid when interpreting scripture, and then methods of study. I'm not saying we'll do all of that next week, but we'll start to move into that phase of our series on studying the Bible. I hope again that it's been a great time this evening listening and joining in. Join us again next week. And like I always say, if you have any questions, please ask. Join us on the WhatsApp group or send a message to one of the pastors, and just reach out and we'll supply the answers as we are able to. Thank you so much. Have a great evening. Bye.